The last thing I remember was handing the attendant in the emergency room my driver's license, because that's how they get all your information. And the next thing I knew, I was floating up. And I would assume, I heard my daughter praying. I have three daughters. And I heard my youngest daughter praying. I didn't know she was there at the hospital, but she was. And then I knew she was there. And I literally heard her words. And I heard a voice saying, "We're not going to allow you to go on because we're honoring your daughter's prayers." And so I said, "Okay, I know you're sending me back because of my daughter, but what am I to learn?" And I thought they were going to tell me some great spiritual, you know, like you need to learn trust more, or you need to, you know, some spiritual concept. But what they said to me was, "You have given your whole life for everyone else. We're sending you back to do you."
Välkommen till podden Human Change med Daniel Magnusson. Fastnar du ofta i tankar kring oro, stress och irritation? Tror du att allt beror på att det är fel på dig? Då vill jag välkomna dig till podden som guidar dig till förståelse om hur vi människor fungerar egentligen. Genom denna förståelse kan vi leva ett liv fullt av kärlek och harmoni. Ditt ljus och hopp när allt verkar mörkt och hopplöst. Så låt nu Daniel guida dig till den stillhet vi alla letar efter. Där slutstationen är välmående och glädje. Lyssna och njut.
Välkommen till Human Change med mig Daniel Magnusson. And I will turn to English very soon. Men min gäst ville gärna höra mig prata på svenska. Så då tänkte jag, men då pratar jag lite på svenska innan jag börjar. And now she have heard me speaking in Swedish. Otherwise, Patricia, you can of course listen to my other podcast in Swedish if you want to hear me more in Swedish. Very welcome, Patricia.
Well, I'm honored to be here, Daniel.
Likewise. We connected yesterday, really shortly. And the reason why I sent a question to you to invite you to this podcast is because we both are in a Michael Neid program called Creating the Impossible. And you who are listening, like, oh, can you create something that is impossible? Yes, you can. Before it's possible, it's impossible. And everything in our world, I think, is created from that state, because before it was created, it was impossible. And you shared your story, and it was really profound and had an impact on me, and I just felt like, yeah, I want to invite you, and I did, and you're like, yeah, and you answered, and then you booked, and I was like, yeah, I wonder what kind of time zone she is in. and now the time is like 11 o'clock, and in your case it's like, is it 2 o'clock right now in the evening, in the middle of the
yes.
night?
Yeah, yes,
because you live in this
to.
Yeah, close to, yeah, because you are in California. So and yes, so I just felt like, yeah, I really got a good feeling for you and the story and the lighthearted way you showed up, even if with difficulties in life. And I'm really happy and honored to have you here. And I'm gonna let you. How would you introduce yourself? You mentioned for me you were retired. Yes, you are now. But what have you done before? And yeah.
So many different things.
You too.
I put myself through college, being a cosmetologist, doing hair. So I did that for years. In my 20s, I lived in the Middle East. I went to Israel and fell in love with it. So I came home and saved money and went back for a year. And I have done a lot of things, from customer service to counseling to, but my main profession was doing hair.
Yeah.
I'm an old lady, so I've just been here a lot. And yeah. And by the time you're my age, you have a lot of experiences, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and believe it or not, because I'm bald, to you who just listening to this, but I'm bald. My mother is a hairdresser. but I guess I got tired of all the experiments.
Well,
I started shaving my head.
It's great on you. So just keep it. They used to say genetically, it usually runs on your mother's side of the family.
Mm.
Your mother's father's side.
Yeah. So my mother has hair. My brother has hair, and my mother's dad had hair, but my dad and my brother's dad also no hair. He had his really long when he was around 20, but then around 25, 30, he getting more and more less. Can you say more and more less hair? I don't know.
Oh, absolutely.
More and more of less hair. I don't know. Anyway, you also shared in your story yesterday about that you have had an near death experience.
Yes. I'm trying to think. It was in 2017. It was about 9 months before I met Michael Neal.
Ah.
I have COPD. I've never smoked and I've never drank, but from secondhand smoke.
So, and what does that mean? Because I'm
lungs aren't functioning properly.
Oh, okay.
So I was struggling breathing. So I knew I didn't have long, so I went to the emergency room and I flatlined 3 times and they brought me back. The defibrillators didn't work. And so it's all very well documented because it was at the hospital. And excuse me. The doctors and the firemen that were there just kept pounding on me and brought me back 3 times, but they couldn't stabilize me enough to work. So they put me in an induced coma, a medically induced coma for 10 days. And so for 10 days, I experienced both sides. And usually that kind of experience, it does change lives and it does have a lot of impact, even more than I realized at the time, but it didn't change my perspective. I was weird before. In fact, I had a nurse who helped me when I came out of the coma, and we've kept in contact. She called me the other day and said, she was asking me some spiritual things and she was struggling with something. And she said, have you always been able to connect with spirit, or is this just from your NDE? And I said, no, I've always been very strange. So it didn't change my perspective at all. But one thing, I don't know why, but I have a feeling to say, you're talking about enjoying life and what I do. When I found myself out of my body, I have no memory or recollection of flatlining. The last thing I remember was handing the attendant in the emergency room my driver's license, because that's how they get all your information.
Mm.
And the next thing I knew, I was floating up. And I would assume, I heard my daughter praying. I have three daughters. And I heard my youngest daughter praying. I didn't know she was there at the hospital, but she was. And then I knew she was there. And I literally heard her words. And I heard a voice saying, "We're not going to allow you to go on because we're honoring your daughter's prayers." And so I said, "Okay, I know you're sending me back because of my daughter, but what am I to learn?" And I thought they were going to tell me some great spiritual, you know, like you need to learn trust more, or you need to, you know, some spiritual concept. But what they said to me was, "You have given your whole life for everyone else. We're sending you back to do you." And excuse my voice, the tubes that they put down, you know, when they have you on life support damage the vocal cords. Mm. So I always speak very gruff. But when I was out of my body, I didn't have the typical life review that most people have, but my only regret during my life review was that I didn't enjoy life more. I had the perspective that life was overcoming one trial after another, you know, that it was a precious thing, but it was overcoming. Mm. And so when I came back, I was just determined to enjoy every moment, whatever that moment was, or whatever showed up, you know. So it brought a new appreciation to me. I don't, do you have any questions, or I don't know the direction? All I know, Daniel, is I don't know anything. And the more I try and learn, the more I realize that.
it's really intriguing and like interesting to hear these kind of things and also in, like, as you say, you thought you're gonna hear something like more spiritual, like, "Yes, do this," and blah blah blah, like as you say, but more like, yeah, go back to be you and also enjoying life. And we talked just before we started recording about Anita Morjani and her book Dying to Be Me.
Yes.
And who also had an NDE, and that is really a good book. Really recommend it, and profound in many ways. So, what happened when you came back, and how have life been since then?
When I came back and was in the hospital after the 10 days, you know, because I was in ICU during that 10 days, I just had to learn to do everything over again. I mean, I had to learn to walk, talk, everything. And they told me that they would never allow, that I would never have the capabilities of taking care of myself. They wanted me to go into a rest home. The hospital. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the Irish in me, but I'm so stubborn. And I am fiercely independent. So I had 3 days to prove to them. So I worked really hard. The first thing I was able to, I learned to do was to open my eyelids. And then I tried to move my little finger And I used to run in my younger years, I used to run about 10 miles a day, and it took more, so much more effort to move my little finger than it did to run. But I did leave the hospital walking on my own with a walker, with the help of a walker. But at the end of the 3 days, they let me come home. But the doctor who attended to me, I had gone for my lungs. And that's what I died of, was pneumonia. And that stopped my heart. And those 3 days, he would come into my room and ask me the same question over and over again. And then I realized at the third day that he wanted to know if I'd had any experiences. I hadn't told him about my visit on the other side. And when I was out of my body, I experienced both. I experienced everything my body was going through, but I was also traveling on the other side. And most people, when they're out of their bodies, they look down and see their bodies. I couldn't see anything. I could see things on the other side, but in this physical realm, I couldn't see anything, but I could hear everything that went on. So when I realized what he wanted, I didn't want to lead him into something he didn't want to know, you know? So I just said, you know, I know everything that went on. And he started to giggle and he laughed and he said, you couldn't have. And so I picked a statement he said at the first of the 10 days, one he said at the middle of the 10 days, and one at the end of the 10 days. And on the other side, there isn't time. But here, everything kind of happens at once. But here, things are kind of chronologically, or that's what we do, you know. And so when I said him those things, he just went white and he drained, and then he knew. So even now when I go for checkups, he smiles and he says, I have to be really careful what I think around you, don't I? And I said, yes, you do. So later on, I shared the experience with him, but not for a while, because I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to overshare if he didn't want to hear. And it really differs so much from the scientific learning that a doctor usually goes through.
Yeah, and a doctor going and is mainly looking in what is already in form.
Yes.
And not what is not in form, because the thing that is not in form, we can't examine that in that sense.
Yeah. Well, and we don't have a language for it.
Yeah.
So to me, when I try and put it into words, it doesn't begin to express. Anita does that better than anyone. I had read her book before my NDE. I had not met her yet. I have met her quite a few times, and we've had some very good chats. But when I was in my coma, I kept thinking, if Anita can be healed of cancer, because I was fighting for every breath, and you know, my body was really fighting to be here with the help of the doctors. But you know, she gave me hope and kind of a knowledge that if it was meant to be, you know, I could be healed. So it gave me an impetus to fight to be here.
Yeah. thinking also about spirits and seeing souls, the capacity that you have to do that. How did you experience that?
The first remembrance I have is 3 years old. So I always had it. So to me, it was normal. I thought everyone did.
Yeah, of course.
You know, it was just, how life was.
Yeah.
I didn't fully and totally embrace it until I was probably in my 30s. I mean, I didn't hide it or I didn't, but I was raised in a very structured religion that you didn't talk about things like that, or you didn't, you know, there were, but it was just so prevalent to me that, you know, to me, everything is energy. Mm. And they're all right here. It's, this is not my metaphor, but it's an old metaphor that's really good, but it's like, you know, with cable TV, you have how many hundreds of stations, but you can only tune into one station at a time. And so it's just, to me, the spirit world is all just here. It's just all one, but it's just tuning in. I'm very ADD. I didn't know I was ADD until my middle child, I had her diagnosed. And when the doctor went down the list of things, I thought, that's me. Mm-hmm. And I think I can't take any credit for it. I just think it's the way the brain is connected. Mm. Plus, I think if you're open to it, the more you're open to it, the more you sense it.
Yeah.
But they are so hungry to help and to communicate with us. They really, really want to. And as wonderful as it is on the other side, there are just certain things, and I don't really understand, but there are certain things that we need a body to learn. And they're also very, very hungry to communicate with their loved ones here. They're concerned for their loved ones here and to communicate. And it's when I give a message to someone from spirit, I don't feel like I'm part of the equation. I may be a tool that they are using, but they so badly want to communicate, and they get really frustrated when we won't listen, you know? But they have orchestrated amazing things. I had no intention of telling the story, but you stop me anytime, Daniel. Because I go down the rabbit hole, you know? But I do have a feeling to share it. I won't say any names because I don't have his permission. But I have a friend, I live in Southern California, and I have a friend that lives in Utah. And so we would meet in Vegas because it was kind of halfway. And we went to a show with a rock group band, and it was her favorite band, and it was wonderful. And the lead singer of the band, when he was singing just one particular song, I saw his mother, who she had died when he was a teenager, young teenager. I saw his mother stand behind him.
On the stage.
Yeah. And she kissed him. She leaned over and kissed him on each cheek. Mm. And I just held it in my heart. I didn't do anything with it. I didn't know, you know, I wondered why I was allowed to see that. But I didn't do anything with it, but I just kept it in my heart. And it was, I don't know how long passed, a year, 2 years after, all of a sudden one morning I felt her presence. And she said, I want you to go to his concert. he's going to be performing, and she told me where and when. So I looked it up on the internet, and of course that was correct. But there wasn't a number. Well, the only number on the flyer, I called and I thought I had gotten the wrong number, because it was just a home answering machine, and I thought it would be a business. And a few minutes later, I got a call back, and it was the producer of the show. And she said, "Do you all?" And so she gave me some, I bought some tickets. And she said, "You have a hotel room?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And she said, "Cancel it. You're staying with me." And so I helped her prepare for the concert, but we were up all night preparing for it. And so the next day, when I had the opportunity to meet him, I was really tired. And so I just stayed back in the hotel room because it was finally quiet, and rested, because I knew I needed to take care of myself. And when spirit tells me something, it's not me to make it happen. It's just me to, it's just me to show up, but they have to orchestrate it, because I feel like it's really important. I don't put myself in it. And so I went to the concert, but I thought I had missed my opportunity to talk to him. And it was, you know, of course it was really, really packed. And so at the end, when they were finished, I just was talking to his mother silently. And I said, "I'm sorry, I've really let you down. I don't know what you wanted me to do, but I didn't." So I was walking out of the venue, and it was in a big casino. So it was a couple blocks long, the building. And I was going down an escalator, and there were people, you know, well over 1,000 people waiting in line to meet and greet him. And because I had gotten to know the producer a little bit, they had really strict instructions of, you know, who can meet him, how long, what they can talk. Mm-hmm. They wanted a table in front of him so people couldn't, you know, touch him and stuff. And but people were waiting, and one of the security guards I heard as we were walking past said, "We are going to be here all night long till part tomorrow. There's so many people." And then the husband of the producer came up and grabbed my hand, didn't say anything, walked me past all of the people. He didn't know why I was there or anything like that. I hadn't shared anything like that with them. And he opened a door and went in a room, and there the singer was. And he was talking to a couple of VIP people that they had brought in from the back. And so I just stood at the back of the room, and it was like all of a sudden the waters parted and everyone left, and he was standing there alone. So I went up and gave him a little message from his mom. Mm. He had tears. But I was really conscious of, I didn't want to take too much of his time. And he reached over the table and just threw his arms around me and hugged me. And so I was walking away because I didn't want to take any more of his time. And he said, "Please tell my mother hi for me." Mm. And so I just thanked her for orchestrating it, because it, I mean, I could not have made it happen. Mm. And so another year or year and a half went by, and I felt her soul again. And she said, "I want you to write him a letter." So I just said a little prayer and sat down and wrote him a letter as if it was from his mother. But I didn't know what to do with the letter. And then she said, "You are, he's going to be performing again. She told me when and where. So I booked another ticket and went down, and it was kind of the same type of situation. He's a wonderful performer, and at the end of the performance, you know, I hadn't tried to give the letter to a guard or anything like that, because to me that was making it happen. They had to orchestrate it how they wanted it to unfold. So I really felt, I said, I thought I let you down last time, but this time I've really let you down. And I was leaving the venue, and I was outside of the venue. I had just left the venue. And a woman that I had never seen since or before grabbed my hand, turned me around, and walked me into a room again where he was. And he remembered me, and he threw his arms around me and just hugged me and would not let go. And we shared a few little things, and then I gave him the letter from his mother. But it really is beautiful to see the healing that they facilitate for their loved ones here.
Yeah.
And when I was out of my body, my only concern was my youngest daughter, because her and her daughter were living with me. And I was really, really concerned that of where she was going to be, you know. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a lot of money, but I had a little money put in a book in my apartment, you know, saved.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how can I get this to her? But my friend that I told you about was raised in England with a spiritual mother, and she really has some spiritual gifts. Mm. But when I first met her, she was very frightened of them.
Mm.
And she had learned to be more comfortable. And I thought, oh, I can go to my friend and tell her, and she'll tell, because she'll mm-hmm. listen to me.
Yeah.
So when I was home, this was like 3-4 weeks after, she called and she said, you died on this particular night. It was October 20th. And I said, yes, I did. And I said, how did you know? And she said, because you came to visit me. And I have no remembrance of that at all.
Yeah.
I do have remembrance of thinking, oh, I can contact her and she'll let my daughter know. But she always said to me, if you die before I do, you're not to come at night, and you're not to sit on my bed and scare me.
Well, I would go for that me. Too, right?
you have to promise me you won't come and sit on my bed. Yeah. So she said, you came at night, and I told you to bugger off till tomorrow. So I guess I did some things that I was not allowed to remember.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It's amazing. And I it's also, once again, it's the spiritual, the formless. And so hard sometimes to grasp and to understand, and it's hard to explain also, and explain it with words.
Yeah.
And more of the feeling we get is more important, I would say.
Well, it's ineffable. You really can't. I mean, like we talked about before the recording started, there just isn't the language for it. I think Anita Morajani does that better than anyone.
Yeah.
Putting it into words. But, you know.
Yeah.
But to me, the spiritual has always been more real than the physical.
Mm.
But I think it's really important to, before I came to this understanding of the inside out, I always thought the spiritual and physical were two separate things. And my head always argued with my intuition, with my knowing. I get a knowing in, people get messages from the other side in many different ways, and I get them in all. I hear, I see, but my strongest is just knowing. But the intellectual brain's always going to argue with that knowing. And so before this understanding, it was almost a battle sometimes within, you know. But now I see them as one. I don't see them as separate. They're two sides of the same coin, probably is the best way I can express it. And I think the one needs the other to really have an enriched life. I think if you're, and no one's more woo-woo than I am, but if you're so woo-woo that you don't embrace the physical, it takes the joy away.
Yeah.
And I think you're missing so much if it's all intellectual and physical and not the spiritual. And it doesn't mean life will be easy. Or will not have challenges, but it's really wonderful feeling, knowing that the universe, God, whatever verbiage you want to put on it, has our back. And everything is all there, all created. We just haven't brought it into being yet, in the physical form yet.
Yeah.
It's just us that puts limitations on it. The abundance in every form is there.
Yeah, and the more we lean back in some sense, right? Not trying to control anything. As you, it's like you didn't want to orchestrate anything. You want them to do it. So you just like didn't try to interfere, and then things happened. And I think we all can look to things that like, oh, it's just happened. How did that happen? Like when we don't try to force things, things happen.
Yes.
And we stumble on opportunities. The tricky part is maybe to see the opportunity sometimes, because we're so up in the head and that cannot be that opportunity I'm looking for. This is another one over there, or I don't know.
That's so true. And for me, my intellect is always going to argue with that intuition. I always very logical minded. And you know, it wants that logic part.
Yeah, I guess we the intellect, if you're going to separate it and naming it something that we believe is, we needs to like having something to grasp and hold on to.
Yes.
To feel safe and feel alive, right? Come and then like, oh, if I let go of that, what will happen? And then it's going to be hard for us to, and then usually we end up struggling. Yeah, I would say.
Well, and then I think we put limits on things.
Yeah.
And like I say, I don't feel like I'm part of the equation. They may use me, but when I put myself there, then I think I become an obstacle for them. But when you're talking about the guidance and stuff, everyone's had so many synchronicities in their life. Yeah. You know, think of all the amazing things that or the synchronicities that have happened in your life that you had no control, but how wonderful they turned out.
Yeah. Exactly.
everyone is connected. If I could give a gift to mankind, to everyone individually, it would be, and I'm not here, so I feel a little hypocritical saying it, but it would be for them to know truly who they are on a soul level. And I really think that would end the suffering in the world.
Yeah. Because then I, when we see that, and I can sense and see that sometimes for myself, but not all the time, but I can see that when we see our true self, we don't need to try to fulfill something from outside. We don't need to act in different ways. We can absolutely live in a harmony.
Well, and we see the unity or the oneness in everything.
Yeah.
We're part of everything and everything is part of us.
Exactly.
And yet people talk a lot about the ego, but I think of the ego probably a lot different than most people. I don't think it's a bad thing. I was raised in a very patriarchal time. I grew up in the 50s and 60s in a very conservative patriarchal religion. And like I said, I was told to come back to learn to do me.
Mm.
So I think that's also embracing the physical and the ego a little bit. So to me, the ego is not, it's part of being human. And it's part of accepting who we are, and we're okay, no matter what that is. So I kind of look at the ego, and I haven't expressed it, I'm sorry. I'll blame that on my tumor again. It's so nice to have an excuse to be so strange. anyway, I think it's, the ego's important, like the spiritual and the physical, you know, to me, don't feel separate anymore.
Yeah.
The three things that I immediately noticed when I came into this understanding that we share is that it took away that battle. I listened to my intellectual, but it's kind of funny to me now. You know, it's not the struggle. One was I realized I needed to let go of expectations. Without even realizing it, I did things with expectations. Even when I go to the gym and work out, which I really like, I was working out to be healed rather than just enjoying the workout. You know, even that small of an expectation. So I saw that I really set myself up with expectations, and so let that go. And I think the third thing that it really taught me, and I'm still learning this one, Daniel, is that outside circumstances don't determine how we feel.
Yeah.
You know, it's our perception or our thoughts. So
definitely.
I say quite often to the other side, orchestrate this moment, orchestrate this day, and teach me what I need to know, and help me see what I need to see.
Yeah. Well, but when we talked about ego and the way you explain it, it for me, like, the only way for us to, as I did see when you were speaking, is the only way for us to function and work and be in this life of with a form, being in a physical being, the only way to operate that is to have an ego.
Yeah.
And at the same time with it, in some sense, it also comes with the intellect and having this kind of conversation with ourselves so we can like navigate in life in some sense. And sometimes we lean a little bit, maybe too much to the intellect to navigate instead of like leaning back and trust that it will be okay anyway.
Well, and we all, I think, go on that roller coaster ride.
Oh, yes.
That's part of being human.
Yeah.
And that's another thing misunderstanding brought is that it's just okay to be human. I mean, we're all human. And I think before I had a mistaken belief that I had to do everything perfect or, you know, and just embrace the humanness. I noticed you had a little dog. I'm a real dog lover.
Yeah. It's a small chihuahua.
What's your chihuahua's name?
Celine.
How old?
Turned 3 in December. And me and my wife, we got it from my mother-in-law, my wife's mother, like last January. So we only had her for a little bit over 1 year now. So she was already doing her needs in the proper places and so on.
You didn't have to train her.
No, I didn't need to train her. And she's bringing so much love to this family. And the presence she has is wonderful. And it's very neat with a small dog.
Well, I think animals and children are like little swamis. I mean, they see and sense so much that we don't. You know, I don't know if you ever, I don't have a dog now, but I did have a dog, but she would look up in the corner and I knew she was seeing things I couldn't see, you know, or in fact, when I was on the other side, when I went to the other side in my NDE, I was met by 3 beings. 2 used to be human, but the 3rd one was my dog who had passed. And she didn't leave me for that 10 days.
Wow.
In fact, I literally, this is going to sound so strange, but it, you know, it's what I experienced. You know, when a dog licks your face and they lick so much that it almost becomes rough, you know, she licked my, I physically felt her wet tongue, even though she was in spirit form, licking my face, trying to wake me up.
Mm.
So if you ever wonder if your animals are there, they're there.
Yeah.
Waiting for us.
Yeah. It's beautiful. But
to me, they're pure love and joy. I mean, I've always thought if we could be more like dogs, you know, because they're just so loving and accepting.
Exactly. And it's same with children. It's pure love. And it's so unfiltered the way they show up. And yesterday I had it was actually before the training. The training we went to yesterday, my youngest, he and we have 2 sons, and it was like they were like, it's 10 years difference in age between them, but they still tease each other and so on. And I was getting really annoyed, like, yeah, can't you just sit down? And I had like promised ice cream after the dinner before, and now I'm like, there's no ice cream, and that is like pouring fuel on a fire. And my youngest was like screaming and getting angry and kicked me and run away, and I I now know I don't need to approach that. I don't need to involve in it. I just let it be. But then I sometimes just go and check in and like, yeah, and I hate you, whoa, and all that. And I leave. And I know after a while, and he was like coming down to the kitchen, hiding around the corner, not crying anymore. And then, and I did see him, and I said, yeah, okay, so if you want to come, your pasta is done here. And then after a while, he came, and he's like, yeah. Oh, could we read a book? And I was like,
over it.
Yeah, he didn't analyze it or anything. And before I was like, what happened? Before he was angry, now he's not angry. I was really shocked before when I could actually see the shifts. But now it's like, I know it's going to come.
Yeah.
And after the dinner, I brought forward the ice cream, and then he comes in the kitchen and he sees the ice cream. And the joy is in his face, and he's like coming and hugging me so hard. And I said, I love you, and I'm sorry about before. You're gonna have your ice cream.
That's so beautiful. Before I had children, I thought I'm never going to bribe them. Yeah. After I had children, I coined it as positive reinforcement.
Yeah, the power of reinforcement. Yeah, and I think bribe is better than threat.
Yeah.
But it's easy to fall to both sometimes. Like, yeah, if you don't do that, you will not get that. If you do this, then you will get this, right? But at the same time, if we are calm and not involved in all these tantrums or yeah, expressions that children have, or even grown-ups to be added, we don't need to threaten or bribe.
No. Well, and I think the energy we show up with can change everything and can quicken that shift too.
Yeah.
Where if we meet it with that same intensity, you know, it's like pouring fuel on the fire.
Yeah, it is. Because then it's more friction, right?
Yeah. What ages are your boys?
Six and... And the oldest one is turning 16 this year. So it's more or less a 10 years difference. Oh,
there's 10 years difference between my youngest and oldest.
Yeah.
But they were really, really close growing up. They still are. They're grown now, but they were, you know.
Yeah, and they are also close, definitely. But it's very close also to the teasing part.
Well, and... even though they have that conflict, if someone went after the other one, they would be the first one there defending their brother.
Definitely.
You know, there's a real beautiful bond there.
Yes, definitely. And also, I forgot what I'm going to say, but...
We'll blame that on my tumor.
Yeah, we blame it. Can you take this one, please?
It's catchy.
Yeah, it is. It was about kids and everything. I don't know if you have heard Dr. Bill Pettit talking about the organization that is spread all over the world that is. Is having unconditional love.
I haven't.
Called parenting. Grandparenting.
Grandparenting.
That organization is full of unconditional love.
Yeah.
And parent is like, yeah, more conditional, unfortunately, most of the time. Yeah. So do you have time to go a little bit?
Sure. More?
Sure. Yeah. Could you share just your Because we've been blaming things on your tumor. Because if I understand right, when I heard you share yesterday, you've been diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Correct.
When did you?
Last October.
My, so 2022.
Yeah. My middle daughter came to visit me, and we were on a boat ride, a dolphin cruise, just for 2 hours. And I've always gotten seasick, but I got really seasick. And I passed out. She brought me back. And she just shook me, kind of, you know. And of course, the paramedics came and I ended up at the hospital. So they were doing scans and MRIs, and then they found this tumor. But I'm really okay with it, whatever happens. And of course, it's not something that you would choose, but I don't think of it as a bad thing at all. You know, it's just part of being human and part of having a human body, and our human bodies go through these things. And I think this understanding has really, really helped me not see it in a negative way in any sense. It's kind of the only thing I asked God when I was first diagnosed was, if there is a purpose in this, just help me to fulfill the purpose it is. I don't know if there is, and in my mind there doesn't need to be. But I did mention, even I won't go into detail, but I have a couple friends who are nurses in the area who work with the doctors all the time, and another doctor friend. So I did a lot of research on the doctors, because I needed, after I was diagnosed at the hospital, they said you need to go to a neurosurgeon. And there was one particular doctor I was trying to get into, and he referred me to another doctor. And when I went into the doctor's office for my appointment, it was a real beautiful connection. It was a soul-to-soul connection. You know how some people you meet and you just feel like you always have known them? It was that kind of a feeling that, you know, usually you don't have with doctors. And he had just moved back to Southern California from New York. He had worked here 16 years, and then his mother became ill. So he went back to New York, where he grew up, and took care of his mother for those years. And then she had just passed. And he didn't know if there was an afterlife. So we had a great spiritual conversation for an hour and a half. He was very, even though very scientific brain, he was very open. I think his grief opened him up, and he was very, very open. And at the end of our conversation, like I say, we talked over an hour before he said, you know, we really probably need to bring up your diagnosis. 5 minutes into the conversation, he said, I'm the one here for therapy. I'm the one getting therapy. It was just spirit just guided the conversation.
Yeah.
So at the end of the hour and a half, he got up from his big desk and he walked around and he said, could I please hug you? And he just threw his arms around me and hugged me and wouldn't let go. And he walked me out in the hall, and in the hall, the first doctor was there. And the doctor I went to just gave me another hug. And the first doctor said, what did I miss? He said, I'm so jealous. What did I miss? So that energy or that feeling was palpable. Yeah. You know, I was surprised that he could even sense that there was a connection there.
Yeah.
But if that is the only purpose in it, to have that that one conversation or that connection, that's worth it too, you know? Mm. But I just kind of take, it's helped me live in the moment more. Because yeah. each day, even though I am not afraid of dying, I did have a fear of the process of dying. Because I'd done it before and it was pretty difficult.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. So, we're not so, allowed to leave.
Yeah, so I was worried yeah. about the process of getting there. But so it illuminated that fear I needed to deal with. And so I've let that go. I don't think that's a concern of mine anymore. Yeah. But it, you know, I don't really know what I'm to learn from it. I asked my body what it needed, you know, and it just said, just love me. So I do Joe Dispenza's love meditation every day. Mm. I used to be a big meditator and then I stopped. Not that I really stopped meditating, but I wanted my life to be a prayer, or I wanted my life to be a meditation, not to have to.
Oh.
Do a to get there. But I just do his love meditation and just send my body and myself love. Mm-hmm. I also ask why it was there. And it told me it was my body having a way out if I wanted it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized I had a fear of what I needed to go through for death.
I remember this from yesterday when you said that what the body has said to you, just love me.
Yeah.
And that is so, I don't know the word for it, but it's so big in some sense, right? Because it's so easy for us. Oh, that's not good. This is not good. I need to change that. And all that kind of things when the body is just the body and just love me. And also in some sense, it's telling us like, yeah, just love me. And if you love me, please stop putting that
yes,
things down absolutely. Your throat or stop doing these kind of things. I am innocent. I'm here for you. And the body is here for us to help us experience life in the physical form. And there's nothing wrong with our body.
Absolutely.
And the more we can see that, I think it's also helping us to come to peace in some sense with ourselves. So you mentioned this understanding have helped you. So I'm thinking maybe people who are listening to this is like, okay, what kind of understanding? What do you mean with this understanding? Even like every episode I have focuses on this understanding, but of course new people just dropping in and listening and watching on YouTube or whatever. So what kind of understanding, because I know what you're pointing to, but it would be great to hear you share your view.
Well, I've always just wanted truth from wherever it comes. And for me, it's just a way of how things truly work, how the truth, or what we coin as the big T truth, not our beliefs, not what we believe is true, but what is true for everyone. And it's a different verbiage of just explaining the spiritual nature of things. And how as humans we work. And it's living from the inside out, not the outside in. It to me, it before the understanding, I thought my experiences determined how I felt. And I think that is a very victim mode. So to me, it takes away, you know, the victim and enhances. You can explain it much better than I can, Daniel. One thing you mentioned about love, I don't think if we love ourselves, we can't fully love others either. I think we can only love others, and I don't know if this is truth, but, you know, take what you want from what I say and discard what you don't, you know, what is helpful for you or what resonates, and leave what isn't. But I don't think until we truly love ourselves, and like I say, I'm not there yet, but I think that determines the capability of how much we're able to love others. Yeah. How would you explain the principles?
Once again, we can go in and putting names on it as in a way to help us to understand. But sometimes the names and the labels can even confuse even more. But I would say that to understand and see this more and more, that as you say, as for example, like the circumstances outside isn't creating a feeling in us. It's our thoughts in the moment about the circumstance that is creating the feelings. And that can be very hard for me. It was really hard in the beginning, and also hard for people to understand and see that, because it really feels like the circumstance actually creating a feeling in us. Of course, you feel this because this has happened in your life, or you were in that situation. But we need to understand and look like it doesn't work both ways or anything, because if it was a circumstance that created it, everybody in that situation, for example, because you've been in situations where people have felt different things, experienced different things. And that points to a truth that the circumstance can't create the feeling and the experience in the same thing, because we've talked about rock concerts and stuff like that. I mean, you can be in a concert and listen and hearing and being there physically watching the show, and then afterwards you talk to someone, oh, I really loved when they played this song. Well, they didn't play that song but they probably did, but you didn't hear it. Or you can hear a song, but you hear different words when they sing, or anything. And it's not about perspectives. It's about the way you think of the situation, your thoughts you're having in the moment. But I think also seeing the innocence in our thoughts, that they are coming up. And I'm starting using this more and more, that all my thoughts are suggestions of how I can interpret the situation.
I love that, Daniel. I love that.
And that was a suggestion that you could interpret it with, like, yeah, you could love this, right? But it could also be, yeah, I don't like that. And it helped me a lot. Like, it's a suggestion. And no, I don't always see it as a suggestion. They're coming up, right?
Michael Neal calls it Bob the homeless guy in your head.
Yeah, exactly. Who lives there without permission sometimes.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's Bob again. Yeah.
Exactly. And the more we can start to see that, and that we don't need to to believe it. And also seeing what coming so much from our conversation today, that we are not our thoughts. We are the entity that having thoughts, that has at the moment, apparently, a physical form. And having the capacity to have thoughts and be in this world of form. And from our conversations today, for me at least, once again, like, yeah, maybe there is something on the other side, if you're gonna name it like the other side, like the entity, the consciousness, the formless is always there, sometimes in form and sometimes not in form.
And has our back.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter what we're going through, we are loved and supported.
Yeah.
By something greater, by the creative force that creates everything.
Mm.
That's why some people can be very wealthy and happy, very wealthy and sad, or very poor and happy and very poor and sad, you know? If something looks really solid to me, like a truth, I look to see if it's true for everyone. And if it's not true for everyone, I know it's my belief or perception, but not the big T truth.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that it's a really good way for people to start questioning, like, and challenge this, like, but Patricia and Daniel is talking about, can it be true? And challenge that. Yeah, challenge it. Like, go to the next, just put yourself in a sofa and watch a movie with somebody else. And then you discuss, what did you see? How did you experience that movie? Because if it was the movie that was creating your experience and the feelings you have, you both should have that kind of feeling.
Absolutely. And I think it's important. Everyone's journey is different, looks different. I don't think there's one right or wrong way. But even, excuse me, my kids, even when they were really young, I told them to listen to what I had to say, but then they had to get their own feeling, their own witness, whatever verbiage you want to put on it.
Yeah.
That I think it's important that we find out for ourselves, that we lean into our own intuition and our own understanding, and we just don't follow someone, you know.
So lean back and let yourself be orchestrated.
Yes.
In some sense, and because you're taken care of.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to fear.
When I was in one of Anita Morjani's groups, we did an energy circle. And it was eight of us that it was in Sedona, Arizona, that went outside among the red rocks. And we sat in a circle, seven of us, and then one person in the center. And we just did a little meditation and then sent the energy, the person in the center of the circle, sorry, I'm not telling this correctly, would state an intention. And then
an intention that they had, like an intention,
yes,
of something. Okay,
yes.
Yep.
And so the people around would just send energy. And for me, it was really enlightening. When I was in the center of the circle, I thought what would come out of my mouth is physical healing. But what came out of my mouth was, help me to know what I need to know, help me to see what I need to see, help me to learn what I need to learn. And immediately when they started to send the energy, and it was all very silent, I realized that what I would coin a mistaken belief, that I felt like the world was an unsafe place. And that's when I first realized how source, how God has our back totally, no matter what we're going through. We are supported and protected. But I was shocked that I didn't even realize that I had that mistaken belief, that I felt like the world was an unsafe place. But until I saw it, nothing could shift, you know?
So true.
I don't mean to change the subject, but tell me about your painting behind you, Daniel.
That one,
yes.
The black and white. Yeah, it's yeah. Actually like a fabric.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah,
I love
okay,
art.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's nice, and it's my wife who bought it, and we actually, it's more like something that you maybe make a draper on or a cloth. What do you say?
Yeah.
Like a. But we put it on a frame to, for our old apartment that we had a couple of years back, and now it's here in my office / guest room. Yeah, but it's nice.
It is. It's very, very nice. I love art. I have no talent for it myself, but I love it.
But your talent is to enjoy it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, very, very. In fact, most you can't see the paintings behind me were by a friend. He passed away a few years ago from cancer, named James Christensen. Mm-hmm. And I met him before he was famous, and then he became very famous. We did. So I collected a lot of his art. Mm-hmm. I did his family's hair.
Mm-hmm.
And so we traded hair for art. Yeah. So I feel he did two originals for me. And I just love surrounding myself with plants and art.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way to enjoy life is to have things around us that we enjoy. And,
yes.
And I think that's, and doing things that we enjoy also. And we're here to enjoy life, right?
Yeah. Well, and with my children, we had a great personal library. And then the internet was not, you can tell my age, did not exist. So everything was books. And I wanted beautiful art on the wall, you know, that every time they looked at, they could see something different to keep that child imagination going. Mm. And that's kind of what art does for me. It transports me.
Yeah. It's nice with any kind of. Like I don't think I like I love art, but in some sense, more or less, everything around us is art that is made out of hand, made of from the potential of creation from each human beings. And I have a coffee cup with Mumintrollen. It's like a Finnish famous passed away, I think, the lady who made these kind of fairy tale books and paintings and stuff like that. It's a kind of art, right?
Well,
even the mouse is kind of art, right? It's design
everything.
And everything. Yeah.
Your guitar in the corner.
Yeah, exactly. That I actually played only like on 10 times and I cannot play guitar, but it's a good conversation starter.
It's one of those impossible things to learn.
yeah, maybe. But it is actually not impossible. So yeah.
Yeah.
So and I think also conversations, having a conversation is a way of creating and a kind of art, maybe creating something that it didn't exist before. And this conversation with you, Patricia, has been really wonderful, and I really appreciated every second of it. And if somebody would like to reach out to you, what would be a good way for that, if you want to share that?
You have my email address. You're welcome to give it out. I don't do much on social media.
Yeah.
I do have a Facebook page. It's under my name, but there's no picture or no personal information on it. Yeah. I'm not really, really big into social media, even though my life is on Zoom.
So if anybody would like to come in contact with Patricia, you can reach out to me if you want to, and I will hand over the contacts.
I didn't mean to cause you more work.
But no, you don't. I'm happily to do that. No effort at all. What would you like to say as the last thing to the audience? And before you say that, I also want to thank you once again for this conversation and really appreciate it.
Well, I feel so very honored and really feel a heart connection with you, Daniel. Just that they're pure love. Just know their worth, and if they don't know who they are, just know their pure love.
Tack för att du har lyssnat på det här avsnittet. Är det så att du uppskattar den här podcasten, så får du självklart dela den vidare till dem du tänker kan ha ett behov av att lyssna på den. Det finns också en möjlighet för dig att boka in sig på ett kostnadsfritt coachingsamtal med mig. Det finns inga förbehåll att du måste ha tankar om att bli coachad, utan du kanske har en frågeställning, bara så här: det här skulle vara intressant att bolla med Daniel. Så kan jag hjälpa dig på något sätt, så gör jag det mer än gärna. Skicka frågan till mig på daniel@humanchange.se. På hemsidan hittar du även videokursen Nyckeln till stressfrihet. Det är en videokurs som jag tillsammans med Danielika Almqvist har skapat, och det är ett program då för dig som vill ha ett stressfriare liv. Och några vanliga effekter som man kan se efter det här är då minskad stress, oro, frustration och psykisk ohälsa, ett ökat lugn, välbefinnande, sinnesro med mera. Tack!